I remember like Little India and Little Brazil and Little Greece and all these neighborhoods that would just go bananas over the World Cup. So what that means for legacy building and uplifting people of different neighborhoods, communities, either locally or nationally, I'm talking to brands about is these host cities are looking to start activating now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And today's Real Talk is with a real leader who has become a really good friend of mine. Carl Keating is a global brand strategist. He's worked with some of the hottest brands around the country, Nike, Adidas, Microsoft, tech and sports and culture and lifestyles really where he thrives. So folks, we are going to dive into a lot of the work that he's doing. He is also the founder of the Perfect Storm Lab, which is an awesome new adventure that I'm excited for him to tell us all about. So, Carl, thanks so much for coming on today.
Yeah, it's amazing to be on, Shauna. I've been listening, watching a number of your guests who you've connected us into. I think you've done an amazing job with this series, and it's providing a real value. I know I've gained a ton of value out of it through some of the connections and just the learning. So, Hopefully, this can just keep adding to that.
Yeah, thank you. And you are right in line with all the awesome guests we've had. So folks, I always tell you how I know my guests. And so Carl and I worked together at an agency, and I got to see him like in motion from afar at first. I remember, Carl, the first time I was like on email exchanges with you. Yeah. And I'm watching you work, and I literally saying to myself, like, who the hell is this guy? Because your ability to just like dial right into it, explain it in a way that people get it, really infuse things with insights, always have a connection to culture. It's always just impressed me, the quality of your work ethic. So folks, I say all this to you because part of why I want to have Carl on here is because I was thinking with everything going on in sports, the World Cup coming up, Olympics coming up, the World Cup, the Women's World Cup this summer, all of it that Carl's doing so much work related to, I was like, if I was had a brand or an agency or something that was working in that space, I would want Carl touching the what I was doing. So again, that's how we know each other. We were able to work closer together at that agency towards the end of our time there. And then we've done some consulting work together. So again, just really great to be able to have you here and to tell everybody about what you're doing. So we're going to get into, folks, we're going to get into the meat of what he's doing with the Perfect Storm Lab in a minute. So first, can you root people in the context of what that is first? Yeah. And then we'll get into it more later.
Yeah, happy to. So, you know, just backing up a little bit, I mean, I started my career before we met, even Shai, I was in the advertising world and realized pretty early on that sports was where my interest was going to lie. You know, I think I was up in Canada and, you know, the campaign I'll always remember working on was this flu campaign. I'm like, this is it. This is the end of my interest in advertising. And so I came out and did my MBA at Oregon, a really good sports business MBA. And that's what launched me into Adidas and Nike over in Europe. And so I've always circled around sport. And then when we worked together, we were obviously really close with the gaming and tech side, which, you know, is where a lot of culture and sport, quite frankly, is learning from in 2023 is off of younger consumers in gaming and tech. And so as I was thinking after moving back from Europe, this is just a little personal story. I was with Nike. I was on paternity leave at the time. This was 2017. And I had a bit of time to myself. And I was looking at, you know, some of the biggest moments in sport and what really influenced culture and brands. And it was what I termed kind of this perfect storm, which existed between 1994 and 1996. And it was the interesting thing about it is it was the last time the U.S. hosted the Men's World Cup and then the Summer Olympics, effectively the two biggest, not just sporting events, the two biggest events in the world. And they were back to back and they were on the U.S. soil. And that's where Nike, who I was with at the time, had their fastest growth in history. Oh, wow. Was those 2 years. you know, a lot of people think, you know, the movie Air came out in the 80s Jordan era, but it was actually 94 to 96 because those two events existed. And they just spurred so much interest in youth sport. MLS launched, you know, that same year, right on the back of the World Cup. And all these things kind of spawned in the world of culture, you know, even the Women's World Cup in LA with Brandi Chastain taking her shirt off, you know, after scoring that famous penalty kick. So all these things kind of just, you know, accelerated. And then when I was pitching this with Nike back in 2018, we were looking forward to the next generational moment that would happen. And it was almost exactly a generation to the day, like 30 years later, 2026 and 2028, the U.S. had just won both bids. So in 2026, you know, with three countries, it'll be Mexico, Canada, and the United States all hosting. And then Los Angeles is going to have the Summer Olympics. So I was thinking, all right, Nike, you're at the forefront of this. You're the one kind of creating the journey for 10-year-olds, 15-year-olds, you know, those that are going to be athletes in those Olympic Games and World Cup. Like, we need to be thinking far out here into what a consumer and athlete journey looks like. You know, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Nike. And it turns out, like, we spoke a lot about it over there. The product teams over there, typically the ones that look really far out, they're multiple Olympics out. They're building, you know, innovative proprietary products. Same with Adidas, usually 8 years out. But brand teams, brand folks, you know, we're not comfortable being more than a year or max 18 months out. It's really uncomfortable trying to think of marketing sometimes that far out. And so it went on pause. You know, I was hoping to kind of create this role. And so I kept it in the back of my mind. And then we fast forward through the pandemic when we met, we were working with our agency and doing a lot of new business. And when I launched my own consultancy just this spring, I was like, this is the perfect time because we're 3 years out now, which still might seem like a long ways out. But there was a big announcement earlier in the year that kind of flew under the radar where FIFA, you know, the governing body for the World Cup, they announced that for the first time in their history, they're allowing each of the host cities, so the 18 cities across North America, to actually sign and partner with their own sponsors and local partnerships. So outside of the Cokes, McDonald's, you know, Adidas's of the world at the FIFA level, someone like Seattle or Miami or Dallas, they can actually go out now and sign these local partnerships to help offset their hosting fees, but more so to drive just better, deeper impact with their local communities, whatever their goals may be. And I'm like, this is an opportunity to jump in around this perfect storm. I decided to launch my agency just called The Perfect Storm and The Lab. And the reason why we called it The Lab is we're a bit of a collective.
Yeah.
You know, I've partnered up with Chris over at Vision Insights, Chris Todd there, because they do some of the best and largest fan data collection across all of North America. They can dive into each city and they really look at motivations for fans, avidity across sports. And so with Perfect Storm Lab and with Vision Insights, we've partnered up to look at and be ahead of the game with some of these organizations and cities and brands, quite frankly, that are really looking to be at the forefront of this.
I'm so excited for you. And, you know, I know Chris Todd and he was on our
show. Yeah, he's a great guy.
And he's awesome. And I love what they do. And something that you said along the way is, like, you referenced, you know, what that announcement that came out earlier this year. And for some people who are listening who might be more familiar with, like, when the NFL, like, Super Bowl host committee, that's only the interesting thing about that is it's kind of parallel to what you were just saying FIFA did. But it's one city, exactly. Right? But I mean, they do plan pretty far in advance, but they do create a host committee. They're able to do the partnerships and the activation that are endemic to that location, that region. But imagine, like you're saying, now all these cities that are going to be in the U.S. related to the World Cup, they're going to be able to do that. Yeah. So it really does dial up, one, the need to really know the regional information about your fans and your subgroups and all of that, but also it dials up the opportunity for brands.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's, that's a great, you know, comparable in some ways. Like New York has just come out because they actually haven't announced where the final is going to be yet. So you have Dallas, basically the final contenders, Dallas, New York, and Los Angeles are all saying, we've hosted Super Bowls. We know how to do this. You know, I think New York infamously or famously said a month ago that, you know, they're going to be, it's like hosting 7 Super Bowls in a month.
Yep.
Which is just a great line, whoever came up with that. But yeah, I mean, the fact that this World Cup is going to go, it'll be the first with 48 countries. So if you think of, you know, a Super Bowl, but then now you're going to have viewership, which is globally, you know, 5 times what a Super Bowl is. But then you're going to have 48 countries potentially visiting, cities from around the world. You're going to have the local diversity of expats. You know, I grew up in Toronto, which is the most multicultural city in the world, according to the UN. And I remember, you know, like little India and little Brazil and little Greece and all these neighborhoods that would just go bananas over the World Cup. So what that means for legacy building and uplifting, you know, people of different neighborhoods, communities, either locally or nationally. I mean, that's where I think the Super Bowl is somewhat of a template, but this goes so much beyond into culture and just diversity of people and interests that, you know, it's a playground really for brands of whether you're an official partner or not an official partner, you know, you can't ignore your employees are going to be interested whether you like it or not. So,
yeah. But you brought up something earlier about how it can be hard for marketers, brand marketers, to plan far, far in advance, you know, beyond 18 months. And I was actually thinking about this morning as I was preparing for this. Like, the pandemic actually, I think, created so much uproar and so much, like, nervousness about planning long term. So there's that part of it. But then there's the part of the risk that you take if you wait too long to plan for these monumental events. So what's your thought about that? Like, just what's your thought about that?
No, it's a great point. And I think there's some stat out there I read recently, right, where CMOs are only in their roles now on average, like 1.2 years.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, you get into a position, you're worried about your budget for the next 12 months and having impact over the next 12 months. What I would say is, and what I'm talking to brands about is these host cities are looking to start activating now, right? So if you're looking to be a partner in Seattle or New York or Dallas or whatever DMA is a focus for your consumer, you don't have to wait till 2026 because they're looking to onboard and start a 3-year journey now. So you can start gaining ROI and, you know, touching and connecting with some of these fans now. And that's something I've done, you know, when we work together with, you know, I've done this with Xbox and Adidas and Nike is building out a really robust, you know, go-to-market plan where you're looking at all these moments that, you know, are going to allow you to win with consumers before the red ocean of, you know, every single brand jumps into the sea in 2 years. And so it's working back across, okay, there's key soccer moments all year long through the calendar where these fans are going to care. There's key moments like the Women's World Cup, even if you're not an official partner of that, that's this summer over 2 months where, you know, one of the fastest growing segments in sport, women's sports and interest. So being able to just build that relevancy using moments that fans care about. And that's really the key is you can insert your company, your launches, your own moments, but it has to start with what moments the fans care about first. And just looking at that 3-year journey, if you pick off, you know, a handful of dates throughout the year and then build a story and a sales moment into those so that it's authentic to what the fan is caring about through their journey. Fans are going to be looking at soccer over the next, you know, Messi, who just came to Miami, he's got his first game next month, which they just announced on July 21st. So there's a whole host of these opportunities to start, you know, in the next 6 months, 12 months. And really then by the time 2025 hits, when they announce what countries are going to be going where, you've built that equity to this point versus, you know, someone jumping in 2 years' time where they have no authenticity really with that fan.
Yeah, so true. And as you're talking about the fans and you're talking about all these different locations, I know that you were telling me earlier about some of the research that you're starting to do. So can you tell people about that? Because I think it's, you'll start to share it so people can really benefit from that.
Yeah, so it all starts there. I mean, what with the Perfect Storm Lab and myself, when I, you know, started in strategy, you know, grounding it in real consumer data and insight is the key. You know, we can put our finger in the air and try and guess, but that's why it was so important to partner up with Vision Insights. So what we've started doing is over the 8 weeks leading up to the Women's World Cup, we're releasing phases of initial research, digging into FIFA fans across North America. So we're in phase three right now. It'll be coming out, I'm not sure when this launches, but we may have a couple phases out. But we started with the universe of FIFA fans looking across all of North America.
Okay.
And just how many FIFA fans are in every city. So we went through all 18 cities. Not surprisingly, you know, the three Mexican cities were way at the top. You know, it's just soccer in Mexico is such a cultural thing, but it was fascinating to see, you know, where some of the American and Canadian cities ranked with just the universe of fans, how many they have. And that's as a percentage, right? So not just total with New York and the biggest cities. Then we drilled one level deeper into FIFA fans in those cities and how much trust they have for sponsors, which is a really interesting way to look at it, that Chris and the team over at Vision Insights said, you know, was really valuable of looking at, all right, Philadelphia, for example, they actually had one of the smaller universes of FIFA fans, but they had the number one FIFA fan trust for sponsors, which tells you that if you go into that city as a partner, you're going to have an amazing leg up with speaking with those fans in that city. So so second step was then looking at that trust of sponsors. And then the third step that we're working on right now is then looking at specific cities. So we've started with Seattle because we're having some conversations with them and kind of what categories of partners resonate within those cities. Right. So I think I'm just pulling it up here, you know, looking at Seattle, you've got like luxury clothing and air travel as some of the categories that FIFA fans really care about. So it allows then both on the brand side and the city side to kind of find that perfect match and know already that you have affinity and loyalty, and you're not kind of guessing at who needs to be a partner or if you should be involved in this opportunity from a brand side.
Yeah. And I think it's so important that we're having this discussion, because I think these are pain points that brand marketers either know they have or they're going to soon realize that they have. Because the idea of trying to figure out who a FIFA fan is, what they like, where they are, to your point, their trust in sponsors, that can feel really insurmountable. And so I think it's a great way to be talking about this and providing like services in these areas, because it really does help to solve for some of these pain points for them.
100%. I mean, yeah, I think everyone knows, you know, soccer is the biggest sport in the world. World Cup's the biggest event in the world. I mean, that's a no-brainer, but you're right, Shauna. It's trying to find that entry point in, like, what is achievable, whether you're a Pepsi or an REI locally, or even quite frankly, a local sports organization who just wants, you know, to be involved. And that's what we're really trying to help at all those levels. We're even working with some agencies who are partners with brands and giving them some of that expertise. But soccer fans are, you know, not all the same across North America. Some come at it because they're an expat and they love certain English football. Others are, you know, younger fans and they play the game and they may only know a couple players and they're not fans of international football or soccer. Others may be a Timbers fan in Portland, you know, so there's lots of entryways and ethnicities and ways in that we're just trying to give insights around it that allow whoever it is that needs kind of the help to understand where to go in and at what level, some smarts and some strategic approach that is going to be right for not only your business But then the word I'm using is your ROO, right? Your return on objectives, which might be more meaning or more ground swell with certain missions, you know, cause-driven things that you're interested in, be it sustainability. And there's so many other facets to like a moment, you know, such as the World Cup, that are going to have people caring about sport and what it means culturally.
Yeah. And the fact that this is happening here, I think that in America, there's people who are here as brand marketers. I think when you think about sports in America, it's usually the big leagues. The first ones are basketball, American football, baseball, which are truly much more dominant
here. Yeah, yeah. Sure.
So I think this is also a point that maybe people will realize a little too late, is the complexity of bringing your brand into this environment, this sport environment. It's not that it's simple in the NBA and the NFL and all that. It's just much more rooted in America. And so there's not all the layers of culture and, you know, just difference in fan that you were just describing. So that's a really great point.
Well, yeah, you're right. The familiarity with, you know, quote unquote, the stick and ball sports of North America has just always been there. And it's people, you know, whether you're in business or otherwise, you kind of go to what you know. But, you know, there's a lot of data that's been out there for a while around, you know, MLS and soccer already draws, you know, an average fan, I want to say, that is 10 or 15 years younger than MLB, NBA, even NBA and NFL, which pushes high 50s for an average fan age. You know, and we all know people like the 20-year-olds and Gen Zs, they consume those sports very differently. They're not watching full games anymore. They're watching it through highlights and Instagram and TikTok. So it's all those habits, as well as the strategists, that once we identify who and is right for your brand to tap into such a big moment where there's going to be a massive Gen Z groundswell with the World Cup. We saw it, like, I have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old. And just in the last November, December period with the World Cup in Qatar, you know, those games were on in the morning. And I can't tell you that, like, all of their elementary school classmates were up at 6 a.m. Like in kindergarten and third grade, watching 6 a.m. World Cup matches.
It's
so all the parents I know were like, yeah, you're fine. Get up. You can have breakfast and watch some World Cup. And, you know, because they can consume every single one of those players through YouTube, the fandom goes to the extreme within a week, within a day, even. They know everything about everybody. Where when I was growing up in a fan in 94 and 98, you know, I had to go get like a VHS tape of like, you know, World Cup highlights.
Yeah.
So that fandom accelerates so much faster with that younger audience, and soccer really is starting to lap, you know, some of the other sports. And I think it'll be good for them to learn off of the soccer moment.
Yeah. There's such an also, I think, a unique element of that community feeling, that connectedness, that again, like, almost transcends that community feeling that we have in, again, like you said, the stick and ball North America sports.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm thinking back to when I was in New York City when the World Cup happened, however many years ago, and the amount of, like, you know, people just like streets shutting down and people out and, you know, watching and all the fun stuff that was going on, just that ability to unite people and tap into them. And I think from a brand's perspective, when you can tap into someone when they're in that moment of pure joy and feeling community and all of that, there is a natural association that somehow your brand is part of that feeling. Yeah. And also in those times, usually people's like wallets are open. They're just feeling that, you know, sense of gregariousness. And they start to share the stories that they are experiencing with the sport, with the brand, with whatever they're touching and feeling. They're sharing that stories, you know, with all of their friends and stuff like that. So just trying to really paint the picture, if anybody's not already thinking about this, like, this is just trying to paint the picture again of the wave, the storm, as you're calling it.
Yeah, and actually, you just jogged something that I'd forgotten to mention off the top. The third leg of the perfect storm, which is completely unique to this generation's two-year window of these events back-to-back, is that the United States, and I'm Canadian here, but the United States is going to be turning 250 summer of the World Cup. I actually thought for a period there they might have the final on the 4th of July, which would just be like mind-blowing. But if you think of patriotism being at an all-time high, right, like 250, you know, whatever they call it, the quad millennial, you know, birthday of America, and just the patriotism, if the American team, you know, does really well. But even regardless, to your point, like tapping into food and tapping into people's love of music and cult, you know, all these countries that are going to be descending on these cities and the, you know, the connection into the sport through other passions is really where you've seen in the last, I would say, 5 years, sport marketing evolve. Like baseball's done it really well through food, right? Because part of going out to a ball game more than any other sport is like the food that's the local food that's at a lot of these stadiums. And then the NBA with music and fashion, they've always led the way. Even though they're maybe not as big viewership-wise as the NFL, culturally, the NBA leads with shoes, food, fashion, and music. And so you roll all of that up of like these entry points, and then you put it on top of this the world descending. I mean, it really is interesting, and I think that's where it's just making sense of the opportunity because it can be so big, but that's where we're really trying to help like find those passion entry points and what's right for the cities and the brands that want to play in it.
Yeah. So when you're talking about, you've mentioned a couple times, like whether it's the host committee or you've talked about brands, tell us who's actually right for the services that you're bringing forward.
Yeah, good question. So as of this summer, it's the host cities, the 18 host cities have all kicked off as of May with logo brand marks with FIFA. So they're kind of off and running with a bit of their own marketing, and they're building up their teams as the host cities are. So they are working on kind of their sales and marketing. So that means that anyone from, you know, when we're talking to some of the cities, trying to help them position themselves now with this new, a bit of autonomy, I'll call it, versus in the past, FIFA really ran everything top down. Now the cities can kind of have a bit of autonomy with their brand and their legacy. A great example, Shauna, is you may have seen, I think Seattle announced a legacy partnership with one of the local tribes, you know, the Native American Indian tribes up in Seattle. And that was their first legacy partner. So you don't even think like they didn't bring in, you know, a traditional sponsor. They went after something that was truly meaningful to their region, which is amazing and totally groundbreaking. So those cities are launching that effort right now. And so if brands are looking to get involved, it's prime time for them to kind of match and find. And we're working with a couple of clients right now on, you know, which DMAs and regions across North America are right for their consumer. And then putting that kind of tip of the spear strategy of how they could approach and partner with some of the cities or double down in cities where they may have some other partnerships to just be that one level closer to fans. So between the cities, that's one, then the partners and sponsors looking to get involved really at the ground level and have that three-year journey. And then the third one is just agency partners. There's a lot who obviously have either current or new clients that they're looking to bring some expertise to, whether they want to be official partners or not, you know, just understanding the moment and how to get ahead of the moment. So those are the three real groups that we're partnering up with to help.
Got it. That's super helpful. So you've said this, you've made this reference a couple times that I've been wanting to talk about this, which is the ability to be an official sponsor or not. And so again, I'm pausing on that because if people are hearing this and they're all of a sudden now they're like, maybe they weren't thinking about it or they were, they're getting more excited, but they're like, holy shit, there is no way I'm going to have World Cup money, World Cup sponsorship money. Because, and everybody, I think anybody who pays any attention to the World Cup, obviously like sponsorship is so paramount. So there are ways to get involved and make a plan for yourself to leverage this perfect storm, the moment, the extended time, you know, that aren't an official sponsor way, in a way that's actually legal, in a way that actually isn't, you know, you're not going to get in trouble. And so, folks, Carl was one of the few people that I always have so much fun sharing nerdy things that we find. You know, we're like, oh my gosh, did you see this brand doing this? So during the World Cup, Qatar World Cup, I became slightly, completely obsessed with the brand, the Brew Dog. Remember that campaign where it was like the unsponsor?
Yes.
Well, billboards, and it was really rooted in their being true to their brand, being true to their brand principles. Also, yeah. I mean, they did such fun and interesting stuff.
Yeah, they were the proud anti-sponsor, if I recall, and they were a Scottish, just a small Scottish or English brewery.
Yeah, I think it's English. I may be wrong. Yeah.
No, that was a great example. And you're right. I mean, it's classic ambush marketing, which is just a tactic as well. You know, on the macro global level, most people think Nike is an Olympic and World Cup partner when they're not. You know, they don't have, they're lucky. They're endemic to the sport. They have product on the feet, but you know, they're not on any of the billboards. They're not at any of the events, but they're able through their marketing, and that's, you know, the highest level, to be able to steal mind share by connecting into the sport. But you're right, from them all the way down to BrewDog, who's a startup brewery.
Yeah.
You know, like, they made international news, and they, you know, they tapped into something that was really real with the last two World Cups, which being in 2018 in Russia and then 2022 in Qatar, there's no doubt about it that both those had major challenges with social and political and cause related, acceptance, right, of diverse cultures in both those markets. So they leaned heavily into that as something that their mission stands for, kind of being the everyday, every man, every woman kind of brewery, and really owned it, you know, and it gave them international headlines. So that's one thing as well that I would advise brands to look at is, you know, especially with FIFA and soccer fans coming out of the last two World Cups, there's a real opportunity with kind of the diversity and inclusion that the US and North America, being across three countries for the first time, 48 countries there, you know, that's something that you could tap and own. Or maybe you're just, you know, you have soccer fans and you do something locally with an MLS team or otherwise, or even not, but or through one of the passion points that we mentioned, right? Food, culture, music, depending on where your business lies, that you can just tap into all these other facets of the game without, you know, having your logo at an event or on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so great the way you described that. And also, you know, you're giving tips to people that I think are really helpful. Because again, we've gone in this conversation from introducing the idea of the Perfect Storm Lab, why it exists, and also pointing out that people may or may not even have this on their radar at all. So hopefully through the course of this conversation, people's interest is peaking a bit and they may become a bit more aware or have some realizations in it. So I really appreciate all this. Is there any other tips that really stand out for you that people could be thinking about, even if it's like, if someone's listening to this and they know they have to go internally to their team, their whoever, and say, we need to pay attention to this. Anything that you can recommend on that front?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, outside of just kind of the unforeseen growth and, you know, opportunity to have make new meaning with, if you've got a product life cycle coming up in a year or two that you really want out in the market, you know, one piece of advice that I'm giving is think, you know, it's classic, but this is really the opportunity to do is think globally, but act locally. And I think every brand today, because of, you know, direct to consumer selling, effectively can be a global brand, you know, where 10 years ago you had to have massive, you know, e-com presence. Now you can sell your brand through Instagram. And so you can effectively be global, but still act really local. You know, where your employees are at, where your core influencers or customers are at. So thinking that way, and then, you know, one kind of path to success that I'm laying out to help get started and really, you know, if step one is getting started and like choosing the right place to find kind of your blue ocean, as I'm calling it, and then understanding where you're at now. So getting a really clear state of play over your fan. What do they care about? You know, there's a really good chance that especially younger consumers of yours are going to be soccer fans. Then imagining where you can be. And these are some of the workshops we're looking to do, is really uncovering some of these either pain points on your side within your industry, or that authentic tie-in, right, through passion and some of the trends. So really looking kind of at that 6 month, 18 month near window, and then just finding out how you get there. That's kind of the fourth step of, you know, let's look at either partnership opportunities or some of these grassroots or ambush opportunities, and then work that go-to-market plan. So I guess if, you know, if there's something that, you know, someone can take to their CMO or COO, it's looking at that the next 12 months, what are your core growth consumers and where do you want to take them? Because there's a really good chance that if it's around a product line or a growth consumer, there's going to be overlap here. It's just finding out now, because in a year from now, especially 2 years from now, all of these senior leadership folks are going to be asking, well, why aren't you doing something around the World Cup? And it's like, well, probably should have been thinking about it in late 2023. So,
Yeah, that's a really good point. And you hit on the word authenticity when you were just speaking, and it made me think about, that's another reason and risk that people take, I think, if they're like, I'm going to jump on the bandwagon in at that mid-2025 showing people that I care about soccer, air quotes, football. And so that's the other thing. I think consumers have gotten so wise to, if a brand is being authentic, if it's something is lining up with their values or at work, they're a bandwagon jumper. Yeah. So I think to your point, having these things that get you authentically integrated into the landscape in the time leading up to it, then again, like, you're proving yourself to those people. You're not all of a sudden jumping out of nowhere, and it's just going to land in a hollow manner.
Yep. 100%.
So folks, you have heard it. Now you all know why I adore Carl Keating. And I'm telling you, if you want to enter this space, Carl's guy, get into what he's doing, wind up on his board that's behind him in the video. He's always making magic happen on his board. So Carl, have an awesome day. Thank you so much, folks. Thanks so much for tuning in. Have a great day.